Mike, meet Matthew.
Aloha, meet Maui.
I really should probably go. I should go Facebook Live on this. This is going to be interesting. So first we were going to mention, of course, you've been with the Maui News how long now?
37 years. I did my college internship in 1980.
Wow, is it 37 years?
37 years. I've seen a few things during that time.
Wow, I mean,
met a few people.
You know, that is one thing. That is one thing about the Maui News has been around now, is it 100 years?
Since 1900.
Wow. I remember when it was 100, and that's. Yeah. But 37 years is a huge chunk of time. So I think I'll just say your name for the live here. We're going to go live here with Matt.
I think
there's no, like, lights with my name or whatever.
I think I may
sparklers.
You know, we're not even Facebook friends, Matthew, so it's not even going to light up here with your.
Oh.
How come we're not? Oh, there you are. We are Facebook friends.
I thought we were.
Okay.
We're not.
Well,
we should
friendly.
Be.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was it like 37 years ago? I mean, were there any major influences in photojournalism at that time when you started?
Well, Wayne Tanaka was the one-man photo department. So sure, Wayne was a big influence. And, we had great writers. I mean, we were, when I first came in 1980, it was 3 days a week. And when it went to 5 days a week, I was hired on as a sports writer. So that was pretty cool, and what a great opportunity to learn about writing and you know, journalism on deadline and, you know, get it right the first time kind of thing. So I was a sports writer for 6 years at the paper.
You know, it kind of shows, because when people see your pictures, you actually are very good at doing sports photos, you know. And someone was asking me if you have to, as a photographer, write the captions under the photos.
Oh, yeah.
But that is part of being a photojournalist, is being able to do that. So. And do you have X amount of words you can put under your picture to describe what's going on?
I think it's, you know, it's write tight. You want to make it as concise as possible, but jam as much information. So I take a lot of pride in my captions and try to get as much information as I can in and not get any mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things working for a newspaper. You
self-edit?
Well, you get up in the morning, and if there's a correction in the paper, it's like ruins your day.
Really?
So, it drives you to not make a mistake, you know. And so, you know, just we had great editors back in those days. Roy Tanaka, Earl Tanaka, Dave Hoff, Lee Modest still at the paper. He and I are the two old-timers at the paper. And, you know, we really do stand on the shoulders of the people that came before us.
Uh-huh.
And, for the size of our paper, I think we're, you know, one of the best papers in the country.
You've certainly gotten awards and...
You yourself
have gotten many awards.
I've gotten a few awards.
Come on, don't be too humble. What awards have you gotten, Matthew?
I won more than 75 state and national awards for my photography
75
writing.
Is huge.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
We had a really good year this year with our coverage of the sugar plantation closing down.
Yes.
And we hit that hard. And for such a small staff, I was so proud of the work we put out. At the end, we did a 64-page... special tabloid, and it just kept growing, and, you know, big pictures, and but just you know, I'm so proud of the people. We have a lot of young people working at the paper, Colleen Uchi, Chris Sugidono, Lila Fujimoto has been there a while, Melissa Tanji, Rob Coleus, you know, all this talent, and they have ink in their veins.
Mm-hmm.
They really do, and they really care about this community, and the community, it's wonderful how it welcomes us into their lives, you know, and to tell their story. Sometimes I'll take pictures of somebody. They've been waiting to talk to the Maui News for 30 years, you know, and they finally, you know, have a chance to tell me their story. And I'm so fortunate that they share. And they trust the paper. It's their community paper.
Well, and you have the most amazing collection of photos. Have you ever counted how many photos? Because you're doing it all the time. You're out there taking, and for every picture someone sees on the front of a paper, how many pictures and photos you've taken before that don't make it? My gosh.
Yeah, maybe it's 1 out of 100, 1 out of 300, whatever. You know, now that it's digital, you just shoot like crazy. I was fortunate in 2010 to do a 6-week exhibit at the MAC. That was at the Schaefer International Gallery. They called it Matthew Theron, the Maui News 30-year retrospective. So we were able to, we put like a dark room in there, and everybody that ever been in a dark room, they'd come in and they'd smell and go, where's the fixative, man? They don't smell it. But and you know, school groups and stuff. And at that point, I scanned in about 700 or more black and white images. I knew this was my opportunity to get my act
700,
together.
My gosh.
My favorite ones. And then about 200 or more newspaper front pages or pages. We took photos of those. And then, you know, the exhibit didn't include all those, but we had an hour-long photo montage on a video. And people would sit down and then they'd go, oh, I've already seen this one before. And then they just would keep watching. And you'd see aunties and uncles, you know, the people would, you know, their families would bring them in, take them to like the one picture to see, you know, like somebody from Takamiya Market working in the meat, in the fish cutting market, or, you know, some of the old timers up at Komodo Market and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had this thing about the old, you know, the mom and pop stores and the agriculture and, you know, there's certain things that seems like I take a lot of pictures of those things. A lot of times in my job, it's like Groundhog Day, to tell you the truth. You know, it's like Lahaina Halloween. Okay, I've done this 37 times. And, you know, and how do you, or the county fair.
Uh-huh.
It's how do you get something new and fresh? And, but I'm fortunate that my job was a challenge, and I still love what I do. I love that deadline. There's times at, you know, my deadline's 10 o'clock, and night, like Friday and Saturday night when I shoot sports, I'll be covering a football game until late. You know, sweat's popping off my head, and I'm writing my captions, and, you know, you can't make a mistake. And there's still a lot of excitement and adrenaline in the job. Love that. I mentioned how much I love the way the people of the community embrace me.
Well, you get the human aspect, and that is, you catch, and it's almost, you always capture a moment where it's not, it's definitely not posed. Your pictures are not posed. You capture people in what they're doing in a perfect way that really draws you into that person. And that's what I love. And really, it's art. I mean, what you're doing is art, no doubt about it.
Oh, shucks.
No, it's Go true. On. You know, that's why I'm a huge fan. Well, I mean, I can't
I love
imagine.
What I do.
You were
do.
Here when that Aloha plane fell apart. I mean, you were right there in that
yeah,
story.
Yeah, I jumped a fence on that.
You did literally jump the airplane fence?
Yeah.
At the airport?
You couldn't do that either, but it wasn't quite as bad then. I actually jumped the fence, went through the Halikoa, you know, got to the runway. It's like, holy cow, what? Look, you know, I thought a bomb had gone off. So I shot a quick roll of film and put it in my sock. So if I got arrested,
oh my
I would,
gosh,
I could keep my roll of film.
As if you do this in war zones.
Yeah, and then, you know, ran across the runway. And the police didn't say anything to me until the last passenger was removed. It was like a triage situation. Most of the people had been evacuated. And then they were like, to secure the area, then they kind of looked at me and said, hey, who are you? What are you doing here?
Oh, they thought you were part
yeah,
of the plane.
Yeah, and they kicked me out. They kicked me out at that point.
And they didn't arrest
and at
you.
That point, I got back to the paper, and I started getting phone calls from Associated Press and then newspapers around the world. My picture went front page almost every paper in the world.
Honestly, what year was that, Matthew?
88, I believe. 88 or 86. I think it's 88.
And what did it feel like to know that your photo made it to almost every, getting thumbs up on these things?
You know, it's a, there's a, you know, that's, I don't know how you describe it. As a newsman, as a journalist, the big story gets you going.
Mm-hmm.
It sure does. And so there was definitely a high for a few days. And then there was some cement factory blew up in Texas, and we were off the front page, you know. And there was a few days where it was very heady, you know, lots of phone calls and from magazines and people wanting photos and the, you know, continue to cover the story, go down to the airport, take pictures of them with the plane. And
see, now these days you would have had video on you would have had a video as well as the story and the photos, right? Because yeah. Things have changed so much.
And I should point out that the very best pictures of the event were taken by passengers. I got my photos out early. There was a man with foresight, or just he kept his cool enough to grab his camera, and we went down the slide and turned around and started taking pictures. And so his stuff wasn't available for a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
And so those were in color and you know, very much action. But, you know, that was covering a miracle. That was probably the best part of it.
Yeah.
It could have one. Flight attendant didn't lose her life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She got actually sucked out of the plane.
Yeah, and the other ones were about to, and passengers were actually grabbing them and holding them.
Wow.
And so, you know, they came in, and the pilot and the co-pilot did great work, and so it was a miracle, and that was what a fun thing to be able to, as opposed to tragedy, because that plane could have very easily as soon as the wheels touched, it could have twisted, and we would have had it all dead.
So you got to have a lot of great photos from Clinton to Tiger Woods to, gosh, the list goes on. Willie Mays? Also?
Willie Mays, yeah. They had I was a young sports writer, they had this all-star game with Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Willie McCovey, Ernie Banks, and they played Sadaharu Oh and the Japanese all-stars.
Really?
And I was sitting on the bench right next to Willie Mays as he's just like, talking with Hank Aaron, and I thought, this is the best job, man. That's a sports writer then. But, Maui attracts a lot of very talented people.
No doubt about it. I remember the one you got of George Harrison when he was leaving. Was it at the court? Remember, there was that lawsuit going on. Yeah, that was a weird one, huh?
That was a weird one.
Because, everyone loves George Harrison. He gave you a hard time about taking his picture.
And then he'd actually said some things, and then to me and Liz Janes, I don't remember Betty Green, but she kind of jumped and said, wait a second, we don't give you a hard time. We don't do paparazzi with you. He kind of, cooled down and said, okay, you can take my picture. So I took his picture. I got a call a month or two later from, he was being sued by he was in court with his neighbors, and his neighbors then implied that the nasty things he said to me was saying about his neighbors.
Oh my God.
So I actually got a chance to say no. And I was actually talking to the neighbors' attorneys, and I said, no, that's not how it happened. Mm-hmm. He was giving me the hard time. And I'm not going to say the words he used, but they're pretty rough. And then I got a call about a half hour later from George Harrison's attorney, and they said, we just wanted to thank you. We understand what you said, and this lawsuit has gone away because of you. Thank you. And I said, does Mr. Harrison know that? He goes, yeah, he does. So that was it. I never heard from George or Paul or Ringo.
I mean, you do get that opportunity. At the same time, you have to realize this responsibility does come with it. A lot of people don't realize that there is always this pressure that you have. You're number one, with these people, you're kind of representing Maui and Maui journalism, right? And there are a lot of things. And I guess at any time there's an emergency or disaster, you have to use your own discretion as well about what is worth and fit to be put on. I mean, you're not as sensational as this paper. You have a high standard, right?
We've never done the paparazzi thing. We've just leave them alone.
Yeah,
On their terms, if they're going to do an event, yeah, we'll take their picture. But otherwise, we're not stalking around, and I'm so glad we don't do that. But we've, that said, when I cover an accident or whatever I'm doing, I'll self-edit. But there's also, we have a saying that we can make the decision in the newsroom whether to use a photo. Mm-hmm. But if you don't take it, there's no decision to be
made. That's true. Yeah.
So there's times where we'll have to decide what crosses the line. I've seen some pretty horrific things in my day. I've seen people at the best and their worst on this island. And, part of my job, and I think it helped me in my writing, is when I go to these events, is kind of to predict what's going to happen, where to be to get the best picture. Mm-hmm. Not only processing light, content, background, but you have to sort of say, okay, where's the action going to be? Where the peak action, where is it going to happen, and where do I need to be to get the shot?
Getting so many comments of people who love you. You have a huge, Andrea Smith always loved him. You got a lot of people just loving you. Love, 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 love. You're very loved.
Oh, I love you guys too.
You're very loved, loved, loved. So there's some interesting news in case people hadn't heard, because there was big concern. I mean, I was gone obviously on a trip, but there was big concern that Maui News may not have the Sunday paper. And also that there may not be anything but home delivery, I think was the other.
Actually, for a while, they were considering going to mail delivery.
Oh, mail delivery,
yes,
right.
Yes, mail delivery. And so that was really...
the people spoke, right?
We heard you. We heard you. Thank you for speaking, too. Yes, those plans have been changed. We're going back to the Sunday paper and home delivery.
Getting some thumbs up on that one.
Oh, me too. Uh-huh. As journalists, we want to bring you the freshest news possible. I think that... Can you imagine this island without the Maui News at all, even in the mornings? But we're the ones out there gathering the news, holding the government officials accountable, And, you know, doing the best we can with the staff that we have. There have been cuts.
Yeah.
You know, we do the best we can. I can't tell you how hard these people work down there.
Yeah.
Sports editor, Lee Mata, the news editor. You know, to get out the best product that we can that's, you know, professional. And, you know, in this day of the internet, we have editors that go through our stuff and make sure that we're, you know, the writers are doing a good job, that they're asking the right questions. They're not just saying, oh, some people are saying, you know, they're getting somebody to go on record to have sources. If we get it wrong, we, you know, make it right the next day as best we can. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff on the internet. Some of the stuff that's on the internet, it's wrong from the beginning and it's up for eternity.
And the worst part is a lot of people never realize. I mean, when everything came out about Facebook and Twitter and the Russia accounts, people didn't realize that they were being influenced. They didn't know that but that happens a lot of times, that they're not realizing where their information's coming from and that it's wrong, you know. So it's really important to know that there is a difference between journalists who are professional journalists and people who just go up there and post things without checking the facts. But as a photojournalist, I mean, for you, when you're shooting in that hurry and you have to shoot quickly, you capture still. It takes that kind of tuning in, that kind of being right in that perfect vibe, that moment to capture what's going on and capture the actual heart and soul of the moment, which is that's rare. Not a lot of people have that. And I really do believe you have it. I can look at a picture, Matthew, and I can know it's a Matthew Thayer photo. I mean, I can look at this picture and go, I know that's Matthew Thayer, because you have a certain style that you're able to do. And I mean, I have to make the segue here, because I mean, I've always been a fan of yours, but there's another side of you people may not know about, and we're going to talk about, and it kind of ties in with travel in a way, 30,000 BC Chronicles Rome. That's the fifth one. That's the latest one, right?
Yep.
And also we have here, gosh, you did
five-book series.
Yes, your five-book series right here. And it's not the Matthew Thayer you might imagine, and there's no photos on the cover of these books.
That's right.
Did you draw these?
My artist is actually from Belgrade, Serbia. I had it was a contest on 99 Designs to have my first cover made. I wanted a mammoth, and there were no photo images
of mammoths. No photos of mammoths, right.
Go figure. And so Darko Tomic is his name, and he won the contest, and I decided to write it, you know, quickly. Hey, come on, let's do some more work. And as a visual person, it was really fun working with somebody else to you know, kind of bring my ideas to light. So for the first four books, every chapter had a pen and ink chapter heading drawing that Darko did, and some beautiful things of, you know, like Neanderthal jewelry and you know, different kinds of animals and stuff. And so Darko, what a great contributor he's been. So he's done all the covers and all my pen and ink drawings.
These are not your typical what you think of Matthew Thayer doing. And I have to ask you, where in the world did you come up with the idea to go back 30,000 BC and create this other world and in different places? I mean, obviously, I asked you before we are on the air, have you been to some of these places? Have you been to Bordeaux? Have you been to Tuscany? Did you go to Rome? Did you go to Gibraltar and Galway?
Okay, Cindy, you caught me on. I just wanted a reason to go travel to Europe and write it off. Okay,
write-off,
it's a tax write-off. My brother's an accountant.
Expense.
What can I say? Yeah. No, yes, all the places I visited beforehand. And it really was part of it. To be able to go, to do my research, it was nice to be able to wrap that around a trip. My wife and I, we love Europe. We have really good friends over there that we travel with. For Rome, we did a very nice trip with Hans and Colette to Florence, San Gimignano, Siena, Cinque Terre, Roma.
But how can you go to Rome and see it in its present day and try to time travel back to 30,000 BC? Because, I mean, I guess there are some sacred sites. There are some temples and pillars that go back around BC. And some, you know, in Rome, you can go back 1,000. In Egypt, you can go back a couple, 2,000, 3,000. But 30,000 BC, now that's really going back.
Yeah, it's prehistory. So it's kind of, what I held the standard to, you know, I enjoyed Roman history when I was in college. I took quite a few courses on that, anthropology. So I kind of held it to the standard for my research to figure out what was happening in 30,000 BC as far as tools, culture, you know, the land masses, weather, things like that. And then with my job at the paper and my experiences in life, the human nature, I don't think has changed that much. The loss of a loved one, the pain of that, it transcends whether you're a Neanderthal or a Cro-Magnon in 30,000 BC or us today. A warm meal, a comfortable bed, those things still felt great then as they do now.
Did you ever dream, actually have dreams? Because when you're writing, you have to put yourself into that book and that plot. Did you actually start to feel like you were existing?
How about daydreaming?
Daydreaming would be pretty interesting. Yeah. Well, almost dangerous
I'm
if you're trying.
You know, very good dreamer. I can actually kind of control my dreams a little bit. I can say, okay, I'm in a dream, don't worry, or let's, you know, take this a little different direction.
Really?
Yeah, while I'm asleep. But
I know that's possible, but I don't know many people that have actually done this. So before you go to sleep, you'll say, I'm thinking about Rome at this time, kind of start thinking and imagining.
No, it's more like, no, and I'm not necessarily dreaming about the books, but if I'm in a dream and it's getting heavy, mm-hmm. I can say to myself, you're only dreaming, it's okay.
Interesting. So there's a thread there of consciousness that remains okay.
But as far as the, I sort of was joking about daydreaming, but before I sit down to write, because writing time for me is so scarce, I have a full-time job, I have got a life, I coach soccer, I travel, whatever. So I fill up these composition books with ideas, and I've kind of narrow what I'm going to do. When I sit down to write, I'm just making stuff up at that point. I've done a lot of my creating, a lot of my organizing my thoughts. And so when I sit down to write, I've let the creative aspect flow, and things may change. I may take a little bit of a different direction. But the first book I wrote in the 90s, I was just sort of doing free association, and I wrote myself into a lot of corners. And the book probably ended up different than where I would have if I had a better plan. So that was one of the things I promised myself, that if I ever did it again, I was going to do a better job with the writing and spend a lot more time with it. So the first book, it was 5 years of work before it came out.
That's a lot of work. That's a lot of time.
It was a lot. I had to take a year
off.
How
do you do it when you're... Oh, well, that's how you do it.
I took a year off from writing when I did the photo exhibit. So that was hard.
Uh-huh.
And
when you... But you're taking all these photos and you're getting comments still about the photos. Someone wants to know if the Maui News would ever let you release an anthology of photographs from the last 30 years. But that's another subject. But it would be interesting.
It would be nice, yeah.
Hadn't you thought of ever doing, your own book with photographs? I think did you ever think you should just, that'd be an amazing book for people, a coffee table
book. It would. And, it's the kind of thing that to do a book, I'm not sure. I know to make money off people's images, I need a signed modern release form.
Oh, gosh, going back.
So going back to get everybody releases for everybody might be tough.
Even if it's public and they knew it was released for the public, it wouldn't be the same as a book.
If the Maui News published it, we could do it.
That would be an interesting thing to do, because the Maui News did publish the 100 years, and that was a great book, right?
Yeah, that was fun.
So, but back to your stories. You take yourself there, and now you don't just let it flow. You kind of do an outline. You do cards. You do ideas.
I'll end up with a list of just highlights that I want to. That I want to write about that day, and Mondays are my days off. That's my writing day. I'll take vacation days when I can. My wife has been very supportive and patient with me. I spend a lot of time out in my man cave, either writing or working on the plot, the characters. It's a lot of fun to do. It's actually kind of addictive.
It takes, if it wasn't addictive, if it didn't have its own pull, it's kind of magnetic pull of something just telling you got to do it, I don't think you could do it, because you actually have been successful. And I know a lot of writers, and most all of them, including me, don't make any money from it whatsoever or get any kind of sales.
I'm not getting rich, but yeah, I'm doing okay.
So, but you have been doing your e-books, and this is the new one, Rome, 30,000 BC Chronicles. It's all part of any of your books are called 30,000 BC Chronicles. And then there's Bordeaux, Tuscany, Gibraltar, and Galway. But the new one's Rome. And you can go to Kindle and you can get it. And Kindle's a pretty interesting thing. I'm still learning about it. But people have been loving your books on Kindle.
Well, yes. A lot of the roadblocks that you run into as far as being an author these days is, you know, the publishing companies, they're just inundated and they're having the same kind of issues that the Maui News is as far as print media. By being able to have on the Kindle, I tell people that no trees were harmed in the making of my books. It's kind of, you know, I'd like to be published, and that's a goal of mine, you know, to be, you know, on paper, to have an agent and a, you know, publishing company. But at this point, yeah, I've sold more than 10,000 books.
That's fantastic these days, folks.
Last year, they have this lending program, and 1.23 million pages were read last year.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. And I get these people from around the world, they write these very heartfelt reviews, and I get emails and stuff, and it's kind of interesting. I didn't know that I would be a romance author.
I can't. It's kind of the alter ego, huh?
Well, you know, I have some very strong female characters. Uh-huh. Maria Duarte, Portuguese. She's this very even-keeled, hard-working botanist, and she's what happens is, and my characters, I tell not as much, it's set in 30,000 BC, but my characters are time travelers from the year 2230. They leave a Earth that is basically scorched. The environment is exhausted. It's overpopulated. There's wars over water. The people are gravitating to the poles because the equator's zones are radioactive wastes, and you know, there's just the atmosphere is too thin to support life. So they leave to go to this pristine world that is just beautiful. And it's full of life and plants and animals, and the fishing and hunting are great as long as you're not being hunted.
Being hunted, right.
So they go back, and then their ship starts falling apart almost immediately, and their highly trained crew is reduced to six people very soon into the deal. And their equipment is, almost all their equipment is going away. So they're stressed, and they're under... the rules are don't interact with, you know, native man, you know, don't cause any ripples through time. But of course, when their hardships come, they gravitate to people that know how to live in that environment. And that's sort of the, then there's a guy that's sort of, I have a very bad antagonist, Lorenzo Martinelli. And he kind of goes over the deep end. He wants to take over the world. And so Maria Duarte has got to stop him. So she's, you know, it's kind of a good versus evil thing. And I really tie into the climate about, you know, I grew up on Lake Erie, the most polluted body of water in the world at the time in the 60s. And I have this vision of one day the paper mill, they let something into the lake. It was stormy, it was windy. And for as far as you could see, and you can't see across Lake Erie, was white foam. It was like a, you know, detergent. But the whole lake was white. And the next day, tens of thousands of dead fish along the shoreline. And so, you know, I've seen the pollution. I've seen what man's capable of. And, you know, when this book was first being written, and of course, you know, even now you hear, you know, people denying climate change or the issues with our environment. And I think it's important. I want to stand up for the environment. And Hawaiians, I believe I've been told they, as far as decisions in life, they like to look seven generations ahead. How does this decision affect seven generations ahead? I'm sort of, you know, showing life, Earth from the future and the past. And then some of the stuff like in Rome is set in Nero's Rome. And I jump around a little bit. The characters, they share memories of home. And so it's not really science fiction, but it's not all prehistory. It's just all romance. No, it's not. But when I was first writing it, and
well, do you ever have your? Because I have to get this book now, and I haven't. I have to admit, I didn't get the series to read, and I'm very tempted. It sounds like you should read it in order. You should start at the beginning, shouldn't you?
That's a good idea.
You start with Galway. Is that where it starts?
No, that's Bordeaux.
Oh, you start with Bordeaux, and then Tuscany, Gibraltar, and get. Did you go to Gibraltar?
Yes.
It's a very interesting place, isn't
it? Yeah, we did. Our biggest memory was when you're flying out. You know, the road goes across the runway.
Yes.
And then they go, they got to hold up the plane until the bird crew goes out and scares away the seagulls so they don't hit any birds on when you take off. And you got the rock is right there, the Gibraltar is right there. And yeah, we have very good friends that live near Cadiz. And so we've stayed, Hans and Klepp have moved down there.
And so, Morocco's so close, right across, right 20
yeah,
minutes.
See it.
Yeah, you can see literally it. From the top. And it does have an ancient feel about it. That rock is so big, you kind of can imagine. You know, some places do have that. When you go to a place, do you go and try to figure out some spots that are more natural, not touched by cities, to try to get the terrain and the feeling of what it might have been like?
You know, a lot of my note-taking is my photography.
Oh.
And I guess, you know, I do a lot of that. I stop into the museums and try to find out what I can. Obviously, the internet is full of, you know, lots of information. A lot of my stuff is pure imagination. You know, it's prehistory. So, and just as I said, human nature. I cover these murder trials and things, and things are going along one way, and then there's always this twist or a turn or unexpected consequences, and I love that about life, that you never it's not always what you expect.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, with my job, I've had a lot of opportunity. What do they say? It was Philip Roth said. There's no for writers something about nothing bad happens to writers. Everything is material, and I've had a lot of material.
I had never heard that, but that's very, very interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, I can see where because any writer, any good writer, you can always tell that, you know. Of course, I can't help but think of Hemingway would go out in search of excitement, like Spanish American War. So you go to a place just because you do get that wonderful, huge, fertile field to choose from when you're out there in the world, you know. And the characters, when you have insight, you know, you kind of draw them to you. But then you have this ability through your amazing life and your taking of photographs that you can kind of see into people. And I can see that in your photographs in the Maui News, that you have that insight as well. That you can kind of see into that, capture a bit of that person. And I'm sure a lot of the people see their pictures in the Maui News, and they're just like, they're telling their friends, it's like, oh my God, did you see my picture? I'm sure you hear that a lot, right?
I think you did I got a picture of my daughter.
Oh, really?
Playing soccer years ago. Yeah.
Oh,
I got to look. Yeah, it's on my bulletin board. I'm going to look at it. Courtney.
Courtney, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
You remember the names?
Think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll look it up.
Wow. Oh, I've been so fortunate to take photos of the kids through the years, and I'm, you know, starting to see a lot more of kids that I took photos of in the 80s and 90s. Now I'm seeing their children in the sports, and I hope I'm around long enough to see the grandkids come through too, see the third generation of athletes and people. This island is so full of talented, creative, positive energy. We're so fortunate to be on Maui. Lucky we live in Maui.
I'm going to end the Facebook Live here, folks, but yay. Because we're getting close here to the end. You know, the time has flown by, but, you know, it's funny because usually when I see you, you're busy taking pictures. If I'm out at an event, and you come to a lot of the events, of course, sometimes that I'm out there, and it's like, I want to talk to you, but I don't get a chance to talk to you because you're working, and I have to respect that, you know. But I did see you at Serpico's, and you were having lunch there, so I got a chance to see you and your wife and invite you down because...
I'm so glad you did. Thank you.
I am really glad I did, too, because it truly... it's now, and I've got to read these books and then see, is there one more in the future that's coming? This Rome just came out, right?
Yes. They're off to North America now. And so New York, 30,000 BC, New York is
coming
a possibility.
Up next?
I'm not sure. I think I might take a break. I have another, I think all writers, we have other ideas, you know, and I might explore something else. I'm actually thinking about doing a young photojournalist in Honolulu trying to make it in 1980.
Oh, we're going to have an autobiography. That would be an interesting one, actually, and that would be a way to bring some of those pictures back.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know?
I have a little expertise about what it was like to do that, and I'm thinking about it.
I think it's fantastic, and I just love hearing, being able to have the time to talk story and hear some of the things you've been doing in your man cave while you're so busy out there taking photos. And I applaud again. Your work is just fabulous, and I really enjoy it. We're down to our last 30 seconds or so, and I want to say, Kathy, again, it's so good to have you back.
You too.
I won't be here next week, but you will be. You get to fly solo on the show, and I'll be back the week after that. People can contact you. Oh, no, he's going to take a picture.
There we go.
And you know, it's the holidays, right? So, you know, next thing we know, we'll be into the holidays when people can always buy a gift. Call 244-1414, and they can reach out to you. And it's always a nice thing to do it for a Christmas gift for someone.
We do gift certificates. So.
Yay. Yep. Yay, and some good deals out there always. Thank you so much, and a big aloha.
Aloha.
Bye.
Late Bye. Bell News headlines, I'm Jack Kiss from